Welcome to Creature Feature, production of iHeartRadio. I'm your host of Mini Parasites, Katie Golden. I studied psychology and evolutionary biology, and today on the show we're talking about animal hobbies. While us humans are all trying to figure out our favorite hobbies to occupy our time, animals are already running, crocheting, and baking circles around us. We're talking bee bakers, web spinners, carpenters, fake astronomers, and dolphin shenanigans. Discover this and more as we answer the age-old question, do you really want to know what a bee mom's secret ingredient is? Joining me today is stand-up comedian, host of the podcast You Can Tell Me Anything, and my friend, Teresa Lee.
Welcome. Hello. Thanks for having me, Katie.
Of course, it's good to see you. So today we're talking about hobbies and what we've been doing to kind of like stay, you know, relatively emotionally stable at this time, and how animals do, like their hobbies and how they stay alive, much like we're trying to do now. So what are some of the hobbies that you've picked up to kind of cope with the new 2020 lifestyle?
First, I have to say, this is a marker of how long we've been in quarantine, is I've been able to do your podcast twice during
That's
quarantine.
Right. That's right. This is our second quarantine episode.
That's how I mark time now, is how many times I've done this.
I don't even remember the four times, to be honest. Like, when I think back to actually recording in a studio, I was like, oh yeah, we used to be in a studio. Not just me.
I do prefer the, for me, just because I was doing all the, like, I was very, like, bootstrapping my podcast, so It has been easier to get people to do it over Zoom than when I had to make them drive to me.
Yeah, but as the editor of this podcast, I have to say, I'm starting to dislike the sounds of cars and the sounds of planes. It makes me viscerally angry when I hear a plane fly over now. But yeah, so how have you, like, picked up any hobbies? Like, I've been crocheting a lot. I learned how to crochet.
Yeah, I do have some quarantine hobbies. I'm learning to code, not a bit. It's for real.
That feels like a step up from a hobby. That feels like a life skill.
I don't know. When it's me, it's definitely because years ago, I mean, I've always been interested in robots and the singularity, but I was researching AI more for like a pilot I was writing. And then now I just actually want to have app ideas I want to make. And I think it's because I don't have stand up. So I've been actively putting together stupid ideas. That's one. I also got into, like, I wish I actually had like a house I could work on, but the very little I can do in my apartment, I realize I really like power tools. So I borrowed my boyfriend's drill and put up like a wall of mirrors to make a little dance studio.
Oh, that's
and
awesome.
Yeah, it's been really fun / probably unhealthy because I'm just obsessing over things I shouldn't be doing.
I also have renovation envy. I live in a very small apartment. I don't think our lease would allow me to break down a wall or anything. Also, my neighbors probably wouldn't like that, me bursting into their living room. But so we are talking about the things that animals do. Like, now we think it's like really trendy to do all of these hobbies like crocheting and bread making. But these are things that animals have been doing for millennia. And first, I want to talk about bees and how they are little pastry chefs. They're incredible. We don't think about animals doing baking, right? Because, like, that's like, oh, you know, you need to be a human with thumbs and, like, a chef's hat to be able to, like, do baking. But bees are incredible when it comes to food preparation. And I want to talk about something literally called bee bread. Because bees don't just make honey. They also make bread.
What?
Exactly. It's like one of those things where you learn about this and it just seems so whimsical, like you imagine a bunch of fairies at a tea party with some bees and they're sharing bee bread and the bees are like, yeah, I regurgitated it myself. But it is pretty incredible, actually, this whole process. So honey is great for bees in that it contains a lot of sugar, which helps give them nutrition and helps them give nutrients to their growing larva. But it doesn't have that much protein. And so that's where bee bread comes in. And that's where they get a lot of their protein. So bee bread or ambrosia is a bit of bee confection that they create by collecting pollen. So when bees go from flower to flower, they collect pollen all over their bodies. And that's not just sort of a byproduct of them collecting nectar. Obviously, it helps the flowers because that's how flowers are pollinated. A bee gets in there, gets all in the flower's sex organs, rummages around, goes to another flower, and then pollinates that. It's all very, very kinky stuff. But they also intentionally collect the pollen. So their bodies are covered in hair. That's why they're so adorable.
Same.
Yeah. No, I mean, like, look, what's the point of shaving these days? We need it to collect the pollen. You know? How else are we going to make this bee bread? So they will clean their faces off. Their forelegs have little built-in combs that they can comb the pollen off of their little faces. That's like when they do the cute little...
I love that you're doing... People can't hear this on the pod, but Katie is doing a little bee impression and it's so cute.
I've got to embody the bee with the little feelers going all over my face. I have to become the bee. Become the bee. So then they pass all the pollen they've collected off of their faces to their middle set of legs. So they have three pairs of legs, and they move the pollen like a conveyor belt down to the back pair of legs, their hind legs, that actually have a built-in basket for pollen called corbicula. Mm. So the corbicula is a cavity in the hind leg surrounded by hair, so that when they like pack in the pollen, it just sticks in there. It's literally a little basket in their legs.
Wow. I mean, I wonder which came first, the kangaroo or the bee?
That is a good question. That? I think it was bees. Actually, yeah, I'm going to say bees. I think it's bees.
That makes sense because they're a little more like bugs than Jurassic Park or whatever, I feel like.
Yeah, I think.
There weren't kangaroos in Jurassic Park. Although kangaroo and T-Rex, skeletally, kind of similar.
Very similar. You know, marsupials are a bit of a strange kind of evolutionary detour. I do think that if you, like, I don't know, like a velociraptor versus a kangaroo, I feel like people in Australia, what do you think? Kangaroos are pretty ornery. I'd give them a run for their money.
A hop for their money.
A hop. Thank you. I'm sorry. I apologize for missing that one, everyone. So they basically pack in this pollen ball using collected nectar and saliva to turn it into this tidy little lump. And then they can collect so much that it's like a third of their weight. So they're carrying just these, it's actually kind of funny to see them because they just have these big old like balls connected to their legs that they're flying around on. And then they return to the hive and they have that beautiful hive structure where you have these honeycomb, all the little cells, and they shove the wad of pollen into an empty cell and then put a bit of nectar on top to seal it in and then just let it marinate in the juices of like saliva, nectar, and then all of this pollen. And then it turns into bee bread, which that they can either the adults can eat later. They can also like collect it and then use it to feed their young. And people sometimes eat it, although I'm not sure. Like, there's often these claims about health benefits of eating bee bread, and I'm not sure that there's anything that's really backed up by research. It's additionally,
the benefit is feeling better than the person you're talking to.
Exactly. The benefit is feeling like a fairy queen who reigns over the realm of bees and, like, have your tiny tea set with your little bee bread.
Does the bread, like, actually bake, like, by the sun, or... Why do they call it bread?
It's sort of an ovenless bread. I think they call... That's a good question why they call it bread. I guess it's just they look a little bit like buns. I don't know if that's the reason why. That's how it forms in my mind. But yeah, I think it's just because they store it in a pantry and it's a solid. You know, it's more of a solid than like honey is. So kind of seems bread-like. And, you know, as humans, we can technically eat it because it's pollen and stuff, but I think there's like some complications with it, like it can actually trigger allergies in some people. It can also, I think, have like
Which bread does sometimes. As well. A lot of, you know, celiac.
That's
gluten.
True. That's true. I wonder if like, if you have, like, could you, although I bet there's like some crossover if you have a gluten intolerance and like potential other allergies. But yeah, so it's not necessarily always good to just eat, but it's, you know, it's like, I think it's kind of funny whenever it's like whenever there's something that an animal makes, humans are just like, oh, if I eat that, maybe I'll like gain the powers of a bee.
That's funny. Yeah, I wonder. It's almost like I feel like we would learn more by trying to do what their version of right. what they're doing so instead of just taking it from the like what would our. I mean, I don't know. It sounds gross, but like, could our Are we not using our saliva in the right way? Like, is
exactly.
there human saliva and crumbs?
Maybe if we collect a bunch of pollen and pack it to just like lick it into a ball, you know? You know what freaks me out about saliva is when you chew on gum or like suck on a hard candy, you're just like eating your flavored saliva. Have you ever thought
no,
about
it? No, because
the way?
Candy goes down, so parts of it go in your mouth.
It's but you're digesting it in you're like melting it in your mouth with your saliva, so you are sucking down like flavored sugary saliva.
I suppose. I guess that doesn't bother me that much. I'm trying to think of what, but I don't know why it doesn't bother. Cuz I'm thinking what's the opposite? It's spitting out the saliva, which that right. to me feels grosser than just swallowing it.
Right. That's true. I feel like saliva, when it's still in your mouth, is fair game. Once the saliva leaves your mouth, then, you know, you swallow your own saliva all the time. But if someone was like, okay, spit in this cup, and I do it because I like to blindly follow instructions, and then they're like, now drink this saliva, I'd be horrified and wouldn't want to do it, even though that I'd like happily slurp down my own saliva like when it's still in my mouth. Weird, right?
True. Yeah, I've never understood when couples share toothbrushes. That's always gross.
Oh my god!
But then it's like technically the saliva doesn't.
True.
It's not what bothers me, but I think it's this idea that it's a cleaning device, and I'm like, I don't know.
I'll like, you know, kiss my significant other, but sharing a spoon is it's fine. I'll do it, but it's still there's a slight thing of like. I don't know, though.
Yeah, I'll, like, lick the inside of your mouth and I'll lick your teeth, but I will not use the same spoon. That
right, I'll use my tongue to floss your teeth, but sharing a spoon, licking the same ice cream, I don't know. So another bee that does some confection that looks delicious, I don't know if it would actually taste good, but I do want to eat it. It is the Blue Orchard Mason bees. Now, these are gorgeous little bees. They are different from honeybees in that they're wild bees and they do not live in hives. Honeybees are considered somewhat domesticated because they are not from North America. They're not indigenous to North America. We introduced them to help us pollinate in agriculture and obviously for their honey because it's delicious. But Blue Orchard Mason bees, as well as other types of wild bees, they are native to North America. They are solitary bees. So every female bees will have her own babies and they do not live in hives. They're not intolerant of each other though. They sometimes live in like apartment complexes where it's like they all make their burrows in the same area. In fact, like farmers will often create artificial apartment complexes for the bees because they love them. They use them for pollinating their crops.
Wait, are there, so if there's no queen bee because they all have their own, are there kings? Are there okay.
Nope, it's
so still
just
a feminist society. Okay.
It's just a free for all. And there are these big competitions for males to try to mate with females and every female will have her own offspring. And they like to live in hollowed out branches, so just basically a little hole that they can just fit into. And they will make their own nest by going out and collecting clay, picking it up with their mandibles, flying it back to that hollow twig, and then lining the inside. So they might make this nice clay-lined den. And then they go about creating, they look like they're scoops of sorbet, for their offspring, that is a mixture of pollen and nectar and probably a lot of their saliva. Saliva gets everywhere in nature. I hate to say it. You're probably eating a lot of bee saliva with the honey, which shouldn't be a problem. It's great. But so, like I said, they're excellent pollinators. They, even though they're their populations are much smaller than honeybees, hive structures are great for creating huge populations because the queen bee is so well cared for that she pumps out enormous numbers of offspring every day. And everyone in the hive is just ensuring the success of these offspring. So it's they are able to maintain a huge population, whereas solitary bees, since every basically every mother is only producing a few offspring, they just aren't as populous as the other as the hive introduced species of bees. But each individual bee is a much better pollinator than each individual honeybee. They really are very busy, and they just travel to so many different flowers. They're excellent pollinators, great for agriculture.
It's like a smaller classroom versus a bigger classroom. It's like what one queen oversees a whole hive versus.
Exactly. It's except it's
I don't know if that metaphor works. I was trying to think of a metaphor, but then I'm like, that feels too political. Well, what I wasn't trying to be political.
Well, what Therese is trying to say is that we should use bees to teach our children. And I do like this bold new direction for America and for our educational system, you know?
Yeah, maybe those bee mothers could take on a few human children.
Right. Mm-hmm. Feed them, just like shove pollen and spit in our kids' mouths and nourish them.
I would let a bee watch my kid.
I would let I too would let a bee watch my.
There's
my
no bees in kids. Federal prison right now.
Oh, did I mention that Blue Orchard Mason bees are blue? They're very cute. I love bees. They have sort of a shiny. They're very fuzzy, but then like they're under that their exoskeleton has this kind of like shiny iridescent blue color. That's very pretty.
Oh, they are so cute. Whoa. So cute. They're almost like flies, but like cute.
Yeah, because they don't have like the striped, they don't have the striped pattern that honeybees have. So you look at one, you may not recognize it as a bee. It is a bee. And like I was saying, so they create basically this long tube that is their den made out of clay inside a hollow twig. And then they start collecting pollen and nectar and creating little balls of, it's basically a confectionery treat for their offspring and that they will put into the tube. And they will lay a single egg on each of these balls of pollen and nectar that they've collected and then seal that in with a little bit more clay, then move on to this next compartment in the tube, lay another egg on top of like a ball of this confection, this nectar pollen mix, and then seal that in. So they create like basically it's food and then egg on top of the food wall, food, egg wall until they run out of space, essentially. And the food is, it looks beautiful, especially when these bees are using pollen from plants that have colorful pollen. So there's flowers that have purple pollen. So when they use purple pollen, they make purple balls of food. And it looks gorgeous. It looks delicious. It actually looks a lot like ube ice cream or sorbet.
It looks cool.
I want to eat it. But it's not
like
for me.
When you go to those fancy ice like salt and straw and they have those like lavender and pepper flavor.
Exactly. Oh, I love salt and straw. But yeah, it does look like a lavender sorbet. But
the larvae on it doesn't look that up to kind of take
no,
the,
I wouldn't
takes it away
eat
from
the
me.
Baby
but.
Bee.
It looks like a little jelly, but if it if it's a little too wormy looking for my taste.
Yeah, no, I don't want to eat baby bees. But it is cute. Somehow there's just something so charming about that. Like mommy made you a ball of like nectar and pollen sorbet, and then you grow up eating it, and then they weave themselves a little cocoon and then they come out next season as adult bees. And then they burst through the clay walls.
Wow. So they don't even go check on them. So the whole thing is, I feel like, you know what? That I wouldn't mind being a parent if that's, if I could just save up a ton of like Kraft mac and cheese and then just ball it up and like lay my egg in a ball and then just be like, I'm going to go summer in France and I'll, when I come back, you're going to be a teenager and I'll say hi to you then. That would exactly. be cool. Like, just let them eat their way through their teens.
Yeah.
A giant ball of mac and cheese.
Here's like a giant Dagwood-esque sandwich for you that will last your entire childhood. Eat up. See ya. Bye. Good luck. Pack, like, with a like a little, like, here's your lunch from mom, and it'll last you for your entire larval state. Yeah, mm-hmm. That's my type of parenting.
Yeah, I could get behind that.
Sometimes meal prep is the difference between a tasty dinner and a toxic one. Loggerhead shrikes, a small, unassuming bird who likes to impale its prey on thorns, are able to snack on toxic prey items by impaling them and leaving them out on the spit for a few days for their toxins to degrade. They'll impale toxic monarch butterflies, lubber grasshoppers, and toads, and wait until these ghoulish kebabs are ready to eat. When we return, we're going to talk about more animal hobbies, and my fellow knitters and crocheters out there are going to want to stay tuned for this. Spiders are the most famous silk spinners in the animal kingdom, from Charlotte's Web to the Greek myth of Arachne, who foolishly challenged a goddess to a weaving contest and was transformed into a spider for her troubles. In fact, that's where the term arachnid for spider comes from. But spiders aren't the only master spinners in the arthropod world. Oh, there is a house centipede in my bathtub right now.
Oh, no!
I actually, there's very few insects that really bother me, but of them are silverfish, which don't scare me, but they like gross me out. I don't like them.
Gross.
Cockroaches, again, they don't really scare me, but they gross me out because they're just like so like oily and nasty. And then the third one is house centipedes because they have too many legs, in my opinion. I don't like it. I don't care for it. I don't get scared of spiders, but house centipedes, it's too much. It's like you got too many segments. You got too many legs. So I got a plastic cup, and I put it over the house centipede in the bathtub, and I think I've solved it. I think I've solved the problem. We'll just have a plastic cup in the bathtub
forever
from now on.
Decoration. You
know? Yeah. I mean, it's there. I'll, like, glue it down. And with, like, seal it off. And it's just like, hey, look, it's, you know, it's the classic cup in the shower kind of thing.
That's the one thing I feel like that being home literally all day working is like, if I see a bug at work, like, I might not like it, but it doesn't feel like it's my bug. When I see a bug in my home, I'm like,
it's your bug. It's
my bug. I'm like, another mouth to feed. Like, if you don't. I got to move this bug outside. Yeah. Or if I don't move it, then later I'm going to wake up in the middle of the night and be like, did this bug, is it still here?
Yeah, is it in my eye socket?
In my mouth? Yeah, it's in my eye socket.
Did it like go like crawl into my eye socket and like live in the space behind
no,
my eye?
That...
Spiders don't do that. Bugs generally don't do that. I actually don't. There are a lot of bugs that I'm very tolerant of most bugs. Like I said, like even spiders, sometimes I'll move them outside just because... If it's, like, big enough, I don't want to, like, get startled and smoosh it. If it's small enough, like, I will just let it chill out because it's probably eating insects for me, and I enjoy that. But,
that's true.
You know, and then, like, you know, beetles, like, when they get in, like, I send them outside because, like, what are they going to do in here? There's nothing for them here. But, yeah, so...
You're like, hey, thanks for the application. Like, it's just not going to work out. I just don't think... there's anything for you to do, beetle. Like,
right, you're a June beetle. I don't think there's room for you. My apartment is like 200 square feet. Get out.
I might be down for a spider if I could communicate, because they do startle me, but you're right. They are there helping me eat insects. But I think if I could be like, hey, spider,
I cleared out. I like how you said, sorry, you said like helping me eat insects, like you both are
like
working,
I have to do it myself.
You're working on a big bowl of insects and you're like, ugh, I don't think I can finish this. I wish, do you want to finish this? I'm done.
Wait, Katie, you don't eat your insects when there's no spiders in the I'm just kidding.
I just don't have a problem finishing all my insects.
Oh, true, true. Yeah, that's right. Waste not. If I could be like, hey, spider, I've cleared out this corner for you and like... every once in a while I'll check on you and that's where you could be. Please don't come out when I'm eating. You'll startle me. Like, we could make it work. But honestly, I've yet to find a spider that's going to follow my rules. So, I mean,
I do feel like maybe if you set up like a little home for it, maybe then it'd get a hint, like a tiny welcome mat. And
it would have to have 8 welcome mats.
Eight welcome mats, like 8 pairs of little fuzzy bunny slippers and like an easy chair and like a copy of Arachnids Monthly with that, you know, centerfold of like, you know.
That's very adorable and might actually make me less afraid of spiders.
Yeah. I think if you're afraid of spiders and you make your house spiders like a little spider house, that will it's just like it changes the game, you know? It's like now they're a renter. So,
there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So speaking of spiders, one thing that sometimes bothers me about Spider-Man, amongst many other problems with the comic book universe, is the fact he shoots webs out of his hands. Mm. Now, I understand there's like different versions of Spider-Man. There's like the version where it's like he like makes his web spinners out of technology, which always kind of bothered me because it's like he was bitten by a radioactive spider and then he creates webs in a lab and puts them in canisters on his wrists. It's like,
that's true. It was
like
just a suggestion.
Weird.
It was like, I like that idea, Radioact. I like where you're going with that. Now I will just do most of the other work.
Right. Like, weather. Okay, so your only spider powers are climbing up walls and having good punches. Like, that's boring. And then there's like the movie version with Tobey Maguire where he like shoots it out of his wrists for some reason. And he's like, oh, how does this work? And then he squeezes his hands and it comes out, which is equally baffling. Because really, with spiders, it comes out of the sort of rear end of their abdomens. And so that's how really Peter Parker should be kind of spewing it sort of near his tailbone, kind of not out the butt, not like out of the anus, but near the butt. You know what I mean? Maybe with a fun like sound as he goes. But so if you really want Peter Parker to sling webs out of his hands, he shouldn't have been bitten by a radioactive spider. It should have been a radioactive web spinner. Mm. Web spinners are an insect that live all over the world in tropical and subtropical regions. And the males kind of are unassuming looking. They look like long winged ants. They just kind of don't, you know, you would see one and not really think of anything. Females are actually the ones that do not have wings, and they have these like big doofy looking front legs that look like little paddles. And this is where they have the Spider-Man powers, because out of their front feet, they spew sticky strands of very fine silk. So females look a little, they kind of look like long termites, you know, like a termite, but just sort of stretched out with those like weird little paddle feet. And they like to live like in decaying wood, like under a log or something. And they will create these intricate silken tunnels out of these threads from their front feet. And the tunnels, which are called galleries, help protect the web spinners from the elements and from predators and from getting rained on. So they will literally take their little feet where they have a bunch of little hair-like protrusions that come out of their feet that actually each of those hair-like protrusions spits out a strand of very, very thin thread. And it's actually the thinnest silk strands in nature created by an insect.
Wow.
And then so like it's a bunch of strands at once, and then they just move their little feet back and forth like they're at a loom, you know, like the shuttle in a loom where you pass that back and forth. They're just doing that with their feet, like back and forth and back and forth.
It's so fine. It looks like, yeah, it almost looks like it's just like a piece of fabric.
Yeah. Yeah. It looks like, it looks a little bit like cobwebs or like silk or something. It's actually very pretty to me. It in sort of like a gothic, like, you know, haunted You know what I mean? Like Victorian haunted chic.
Yeah.
So basically, these web spinners make all these little tunnels out of silk, and they can live comfortably inside because they like to feed on lichen and moss, which is plentiful in the rotting wood that they are building this. And the silk canopies are so well made, it'll catch the rain as it falls down. And in fact, when water falls on it, it like gets absorbed by the webbing, and it actually changes the structure of the webbing so it becomes even more water resistant. So it's amazing in terms of how it is so weatherproof. And so they can live there. Their offspring can live comfortably in there, and they can actually be really social. So a bunch of web spinners can work together to create a bunch of like galleries and like webbing together. And even though they don't necessarily live in colonies exactly, it's still like they're neighbors, and they're not too fussed about sharing their handiwork because it benefits all of them to basically, once you got a web spinner making these things and then more web spinners come in the mix, you start to get these very elaborate structures of canopies, and it helps all of them. One thing that's kind of funny is they can't really turn off their web spinning feet on cue. Like, it's sort of the pressure that makes those silk ejectors work. So if they walk on their feet, just like normally, it will leave behind a trail of sticky thread that they can get tangled in. So if they want to walk forwards, they actually have to walk on their tippy toes, like a little ballerina, so that they don't trigger the web spinners. And so if they're trying to evade a predator and they're like walking on their tippy toes away, it's really kind of cute and pathetic. But normally, to evade a predator, because they can't move very fast on their tippy toes, they will shimmy backwards and back away from the predator, because that way they can still like walk on the flats of their feet. And even though it leaves behind strands of webbing, like they won't get tangled in it because they're moving backwards. So either way, like looking at them trying to evade predators is really cute and sad. Just leave them alone. All they want to do is crochet and stay inside, just like me.
It's cute that I like the idea that to build like a town, everyone has to build it. Like, imagine if everyone in LA, in order to use the highways, you had to like help build it. Like traffic, it would help traffic so much if like you have to help build the road that you want to drive on, and you would treat it better and you would drive safer and you would just be nicer to the people on the road because you all built it together.
So wait, if we all build things together and work together, you mean it might improve our quality of life? That sounds like socialism.
You're right. It was stupid. Why did I even say it? You're right. Dumb, dumb, dumb.
Reviewer from like Weed Goku 69 says like, Teresa Lee not only introduced politics by saying our children should be educated by bees, but started talking about bee socialism propaganda. Another crafty insect I'd like to talk about are carpenter ants. Now, if you live in an area that carpenter ants frequent, you may already be familiar with these and perhaps have a rather antagonistic relationship with them, because they are similar to termites in that they carve out wood. Unlike termites, they don't actually ever consume wood. They just rip it out with their mandibles to construct themselves a colony. So sometimes when you think you may have termites, but you see these big piles of like sawdust, that is actually carpenter ants, because they leave behind these big piles of sawdust that they are not eating. So carpenter ants are ants who carve out these extensive structures. Usually they prefer rotting wood. But sometimes they will attack like human structures that is made out of lumber if it's soft enough. And they will basically like dig out all of the wood between, you know how like trees have rings, and then like in between each ring you have like this new growth and like this like kind of old growth and then new growth, blah, 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 so on and so forth. And then you have the tree rings, and that's used to sort of like date it. Well, the ants will like carve out between the rings, and then what that does is it gives them all of these little like concentric walkways that they can use and travel throughout the colony. And then they create sort of a nursery area and then all of these like satellite colonies. So they're basically creating like a wooden city. It's really incredible.
That's cool.
And for in terms of like in forests, this is actually great because, again, they like decaying trees and they do a really wonderful job of clearing out like decaying trees and helping with the decomposition process. You know, when you have like a big tree that falls down in a forest, as you start to break that tree up into its composite parts and using them and then feeding on them, you actually, you know, that's a good process of decay that helps the forest kind of regrow and have like you have this microbiome of these organisms that flourish. And then you can have new plants that take its place. And like, you know, you have soil that can become more fertile. And it's very useful.
Interesting, this idea of like going after rotting or decaying, because normally to the human eye, we'd think like, oh, that's like you see something dead and you feel like it's death, but actually, right. Or you see bugs and you think death, but in reality, it's full of life. So that's exactly. Like an interesting way to think about it.
Yeah, I remember when I was in sixth grade camp, we had, we would go on these hikes and we each had our own like hike tour guide, and ours was obsessed with talking about decay, like the decaying cycle. And at the time, like, I was a very scared little sixth grader. I was terrified of being away from home. And like, I was just like living in fear, like in this camp, and like there are bats everywhere. I was like, everyone's gonna get rabies. We're gonna get killed by a serial killer. Now I'm on this hike with like this crazy lady who's like talking about decomposition. And she's like, do you kids want to see a dead horse? And everyone's like, yay. And so takes us to this pile of hair and teeth that was like a dead horse.
Ew.
She's like, I know this may seem gross to you, but this is actually a beautiful part of life. Decay is just as much of a part of life as life is. And at the time, I was like, are you crazy? Oh, you showed us a dead pony. Like, Twilight Sparkle is dead and you're just showing it to us? Now I understand where she's coming from, because when you have decay in a forest, that means huge amounts of life that springs from the decaying, whether it's a horse carcass or a tree carcass.
I feel like there's like age appropriate, like you got to be a full adult and you've understood life before you see that, because it could really fuck you up.
Yeah.
You see that too young.
I turned out fine. I'm fine. Don't worry. I turned out fine. Now, you can totally tell by how much I talk about parasites and like dead things and gross stuff on this show that it was actually perfect that I learned by seeing a dead horse in sixth grade. And it was a good growing experience.
I think you need to build a welcome mat for dead horses in your house.
That's
Katie.
True. That I think that would heal me, like next to my 8 welcome mats for the spider. Just have like one welcome mat for like welcome dead horses. Oh. I'm like a horse girl, but for dead and decaying horses.
Oh God.
So another interesting thing about carpenter ants is that they have different jobs. So like in an ant colony, you have like different jobs. You have the queen ant, you have the worker ants. You sometimes in some ant colonies, you'll have like soldier ants that are like bigger and bulkier. With carpenter ants, they have worker ants, and they also have what are called honeypot ants, which also occur in other species of ants as well. But honeypot ants are a type of worker ant whose job is to become a living pantry for other ants by eating so much that they basically turn into food balloons. So they consume huge amounts of food, and it turns into this like sweet sugary liquid in their abdomens. And
it looks,
but it's
like,
so much of it.
I mean, well, I know you said abdomen, but this photo, it just looks like it's got a juicy booty. This might be my vibe. I feel like this ant.
You're vibing with this ant.
Yeah, this is who I am inside.
Yeah, I mean, it is. It basically turns itself into a water balloon of food. Like you look at it, it's actually kind of pretty. So like you see it, it's like it looks like its butt is just filled with. It's just this like amber orb of.
You could
food.
Say juicy booty, Katie.
It's a juicy booty. Okay. Juicy booty. You missed those shorts that say juicy on the back?
Yes. I never got to have one because the actual ones were expensive. The Juicy Couture.
Yeah. So, I never got those as a kid. I was a very like straight-laced little kid. I would never get like a thing that said juicy on my butt. Now I'm thinking of like just crocheting my own juicy couture shorts. It.
I took wood shop in middle school. I was like one of two girls in the class. And for our final project, which was freestyle, like do whatever you want, I made a plaque that said naughty or nice. And it was a picture of an angel and a devil with the words naughty or nice. And I just painted flames on the naughty.
Nice.
And angel wings on the nice. Literally everybody's like, why are you in this class? I like woodworking.
But are you kidding? Like, that's amazing. What do you mean, why are you in this class?
All the men were like, or boys. They weren't men. I called them men. All the boys were like.
A real man would congratulate you on your artistry.
I want to use power tools. I was like, well, guess what? Those power tools you thought were so cool, I used them and I made this cute little naughty or nice plaque.
That's amazing. That's amazing. That's what instead of like a live, laugh, love plaque, I want like naughty or nice or like hail Satan.
Oh my God.
With these honeypot ants, actually sometimes people will eat them because basically they're like not juicy fruit. What are?
Oh, like gushers?
Gushers. They're like little living gushers because they are full of sugary goo. And they are apparently very delicious if you can get past the fact that your gusher is an ant.
Might be better for you than gushers. Gushers are just chemicals.
That's true. I'm actually grossed out by gushers. Something about it, like you're like chewing on this thing and it pops in your mouth. It's very like pustular that I don't like. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I feel like these ants, they should make, if they marketed these ants, it'd just be like, you like your gushers with the head and legs on them?
That's a good marketing technique. Like, would you like a gusher, but it's alive and it's got a head and legs?
Yeah.
They do that already in marketing of candy. Like, hi, kids, I'm living candy. Murder me. I want to be eaten.
Yeah. What's up with that? I wonder if there's like an innate hunter-gatherer vibe that we have. Like, why do we, of all the mascots for M&Ms, why do we just make them
alive?
M&Ms.
We crave murder. It's because we need to
feel like we're hunting for our candy.
We want to feel like when we like chase down nerds, they're cute little things that like are literally running away from us and that we eat. And
wow, you know, I mean, that's wild. I think you're right. That's crazy.
Maybe your quarantine hobby could be starting a gustatory adventure when it comes to eating insects. While I don't suggest picking up random bugs and putting them in your mouth, insects and other arthropods are a beloved food all over the world. Our culture is just biased against them. Cooked scorpions, sans stinger, apparently tastes like soft-shell crab. Roasted grubs reportedly taste like bacon. Mealworms have a slightly crunchy, nutty flavor. Crickets are apparently like a combination of popcorn and almonds with a few more legs. Sounds good, no? Well, personally, I haven't quite gotten over my cultural hang-ups about bugs, but maybe one of these days I'll enjoy some nice fried grubs, cricket flour pancakes, with a dash of honeypot ant syrup. When we return, we're going to talk about some stargazing with an alien danger. Imagine you're enjoying a starry sky. Wouldn't it be nice to grow wings and fly up into the stars, bathed in the glowing light of a billion distant suns? You see Orion and the Little Dipper, and, well, actually, you don't really recognize these constellations. That's strange. What's going on? Why are you suddenly stuck, as if you've hit a ceiling? And what's that thing crawling towards you? Well, you'll find out soon enough. Section I've just called vibing, because I feel like one of the hobbies of the quarantine 2020 times to try to stay, I don't know, just like keep your spirits up is just finding out ways to vibe that, you know what I mean?
It's like almost like, you know, like your brain can provide like serotonin and whatever, you know, the mood enhancers. But I feel like a lot of cultures have like festival of lights in the dark times, like during the, you know, winter. And this photo of these lights, it's kind of like an external way to add, you might think it's frivolous like decoration, but it's not. It's actually to produce those like happy hormones just yeah. looking at something nice.
Yeah. I feel like we have to kind of think of ways to, like, because all of those things like festivals and rituals and mm-hmm. gatherings, like I think it serves an extremely important purpose for human psychology. And
yeah, like the gathering of the juggalos.
Exactly. Like it's a yearly migration, one of the largest migrations in the natural world, that of the juggalos. But yeah, I mean, it is really important. Obviously, like our health and not dying or killing people with COVID is more important at this time. Like that takes priority, keeping people safe from a deadly disease. However, I think if we can figure out ways to like just kind of enjoy ourselves and get that like, and I'm like very agnostic, but I think there's a lot to be said about like rituals and festivals mm-hmm. in terms of that like kind of inner fulfillment. There's something really yeah. like, I don't know, like if you want to put up like string lights or festival lights or like continue mm-hmm. with sort of, I guess, just like do fun things like to keep yeah. you.
You said lights, and I did buy LED lights to put up. And I just realized I put up, I bought some like space prints, like because you know NASA's photographs are nice. Public, and sometimes people print posters. So I bought a bunch of galaxy photographs and put them up. And I think probably innately I'm missing,
yes,
like my connection to nature and the sky. Even though I've only lived in like big cities where I don't really stargaze, I just maybe subconsciously, yeah. at the very least, I get a little bit of it when I'm out. I don't have it at all.
I mean, like the lights of the city maybe take the place yeah. of the lights of the stars in our brains. And sure. if we're not going out in the city at night and getting the lights and like, you know, going to mm-hmm. movies where we're getting all this light and stuff, like maybe that part of us, it's like because I share that exact thing. Like I want to just look at a night sky and look at the stars. I can't because we're in LA. And yeah,
I've been waking up with the sun, not with no alarm, and it at first alarmed me, but I think it is my body being like, you're in hunter-gatherer mode now. Like,
you need to follow the diurnal rhythm of the sun.
It yeah. just started, and it's been doing that for weeks. I just, eyes wide open as the sun's coming up, and I'm like, I guess we're awake now.
Yeah. Fine. Because we're talking about, like, lights, and I love that, like, you're thinking about stargazing and stuff. I think there's something that is so aspirational about that, like when we're kind of stuck in this like survival mode. And there is an insect that also likes to create an artificial environment of stars, and this is known as Arachnocampa luminosa, which is also known as the glowworm, the New Zealand glowworm.
When you said artificial environment of stars, I was like, what are we in LA or something?
Egg, yeah, nice. Got him roasted.
Got him.
Hollywood destroyed. So these glowworms are actually the larva of a fungus gnat. So fungus gnat is sort of like it looks a bit like a mosquito, but it does not feed on human blood. It feeds on fungus and seedlings, but their larva are glowworms, and they are so creepy and beautiful. They are these transparent, long, like wormy maggots, and they have bioluminescent butts. Like their sort of caboose area, it glows blue, and they live on the ceilings of caves. So they weave silken hammocks all along the ceiling, and they actually travel through these silken hammocks like they're on a monorail, essentially, like all of these like sort of monorail worms going around with their glowing cabooses. But they live in these big groups, and when they're all clustered together like that, they actually look a lot like a beautiful starry sky. Like you're looking at yeah. an image of them, and they actually flicker as well. If you wanted to look at the video, you can see how they kind of glow and flicker.
So the video, okay, so I see the string. So is that all one worm? That's a long string.
There's, no.
It looks like jellyfish almost, where they're like.
Yeah. No, so the worm, those like dangling tentacle like things are actually strands of silk that the worms have constructed. So they're strands of silk that have little globs of sticky saliva on it. So they look a little bit like icicles or stalactites, but they're actually just strands of silk with sticky spit on it. And the reason they do that is that even though they're beautiful and it looks like this fairy wonderland, these are vicious carnivores. So they will create these intricate, like, it's beautiful. It looks like Christmas lights. And, like, you know, like those sort of like icicle Christmas lights that dangle down.
It looks like an exhibit that would be at a, like, a music festival.
Yeah.
Like, you know,
yeah.
Someone's tripping on
like
acid.
An EDM festival.
Yeah. It's funny that you said their cabooses glow, because I'm like, I mean, give it like 5-10 years, that's going to be a trend. Like some Hollywood influencer is going to be like, have you gotten the latest surgery to get a bioluminescent ass?
Oh my God.
That's got to be
wait.
Like, come on.
I can't
glowing
wait.
Glowing butts?
I'm gonna
you
get
would light up the club.
Yes. Please, thank you. I'm going to get glowing butt implants and then learn to twerk so that, you know. That'll be my excuse. It's like, look, I have to learn butt dances because my butt glows now. I'd be depriving the world of this glowing butt.
I'm only half joking. I'm like, bioluminescent butt, especially if it's in nature. I could see this. This
exactly.
Would take off.
Now I'm thinking I should crochet some juicy pants, but with like bioluminescent threads. Yes.
Mm-hmm. I support it.
Yes. So they create so all of these like beautiful dangling threads, and then the worms themselves are bioluminescent, so the threads aren't actually glowing, but it's reflecting the bioluminescence of the worms. And all of this effect creates this dazzling light display that moths and other insects that are traveling through the cave will see. And moths actually use starlight to navigate, so they don't just like go towards light because they're dumb. They go towards light because they actually are able to navigate in the night sky by following the stars and the moon. And so in these caves, when you have this like fake display of twinkling stars, it disorients the moths. They fly towards the fake sky, even though it's not a sky at all. It's just the ceiling of the cave. And then they land into these sticky hanging threads and become trapped. And as a glowworm feels a moth vibrating their thread, they will reel in the thread and eat the poor moth that thought it was flying towards starlight.
Oh my God, that's so sad. I mean, I hate moths, but wow.
I mean,
is that what we do when we move to big cities? We're just all getting trapped in the web of
that's exactly what
liberal
it is.
Lies, socialism.
LA is just people don't know this, but there's actually just a giant glowworm that eats everybody.
Yeah, the earthquakes are the vibrations.
That's right. Look it up, people.
Yep.
Do your research. Don't you love it when someone like proposes a crazy conspiracy theory and you're like, "What are you talking about?" Why don't you do your research?
Every single time I've seen a documentary about conspiracy theorists, the one person, like the doctor or the expert who was like, so I did. And it's like within minutes, they're like, and I disproved them immediately. It's like anyone's like, look it up. It's like, okay, I did. It's very easy to disprove you.
Well, you're not looking at the right websites then.
Yeah, but if you ignore all of these other books and then you just look at this one thread written by this one blogger who's anonymous, but he keeps it that way to protect himself. Yeah. And he doesn't back it up with anything, but trust me, it's real. It's like, okay.
Twitter is run by a big glowworm and everyone knows it. So if you read sources by big glowworm, guess what? They're going to deny that a giant glowworm lives in LA and consumes everybody. Wake up, sheeple. Anyways, it's really interesting because like the glowworms are so committed to the grift. They actually, there's like multiple glowworm colonies within one cave. So a bunch of like groups of glowworms that all kind of similar to the web spinner, where they kind of share their woven silken runways a little bit, or not runways, sort of like railways. And but the different colonies also seem to collaborate. So one colony will have a cycle where they're glowing and attracting insects, and then they'll sort of like shut off, and then another colony will take their turn glowing. And it's relatively new research, so it's not researchers aren't exactly sure why they seem to take turns. Maybe it's like sort of a way to ensure that the cave is sort of glowing at all times, so you're always sort of getting a flow of insects, but it's not going just to one colony because they probably can't handle that many moths at once. So you're sort of like working together to create a eternally fake starlit sky to trick moths, but then making sure all of the colonies sort of like get sort of equal distributions of food. Again, socialism.
Wow. Yeah.
And then the last thing I want to talk about is just so charming and fun. It is a fun little game that dolphins play. So dolphins are very playful, intelligent creatures, and dolphins and other cetaceans like belugas like to do fun underwater vape tricks, except not with vape, just with air. So you know how like people with vape, like I don't have anything against vaping really. I vape culture though sometimes, you know what I mean? Where it's someone who has dedicated their life to doing vape tricks, you know? I think they're awesome. I love to see a vape trick.
The lady doth protest too much, I think. But I did want to, a couple of years ago when we were at Cracked, I thought it'd be, I never ended up doing this, but this was one of those ideas. I was like, if I have too much time, I'll do this. I wanted to write a step up, but with a kid who wanted to go to school for, or compete in vape tricks.
Yeah.
Like, but mom, I want to vape. I don't want to go to college. I want to vape.
I want to be a vape bard. No, it is. I actually love to see a vape trick. Those are pretty sick and tight and cool. But dolphins.
Yeah, you can't see it, but Katie is doing the Sheka.
I'm
hand
doing
signal,
it.
You know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
No, she's not. She's
taking a big huff of vape, as they say, as the kids say. Don't they say that? You know.
Yeah, I'm just gonna go and do some vape. I'm gonna go. Do
I'm gonna
some vape.
Do some vape and blow some sick clouds. I'm very cool. Love me, Zoomers. Love me. So, dolphins. Hey, Zoomers. You may think dolphins boring, right? No. Turns out they love to do sick vape tricks, too, under the water. So, they will blow bubble rings underwater using nothing but their blowhole and little flipper tricks, where they will create a vortex by moving the water with their flipper. They'll create a spinning vortex. They'll use their blowhole to blow a bubble of air towards the vortex. And as it gets caught up in the vortex, it creates this perfect, beautiful, shimmering ring of air under the water. You know that scene in like The Hobbit where Gandalf is like, check this out, Frodo. I'm going to blow like... Or no, wait. He's sitting with Bilbo and Bilbo blows like a smoke ring and Gandalf is like, oh yeah, that's pretty cool. Check this out. And he blows like a whole like boat out of smoke out of his pipe. Okay, Gandalf, like chill out, you know?
I have no idea if this is real or not. I mean, it sounds like something that could happen, but it also sounds like a joke.
With the Gandalf thing?
I guess I don't know Lord of the Rings well enough to know if this is a joke about Lord of the Rings or if this is true.
Yeah, it's a fictional, like the movie is fictional on account of all the magic and stuff, but it did happen.
No, I mean like if this is a real scene from it.
I know, I'm just kidding. I'm giving you a hard time. Witherth aren't real, Teresa. No, it does happen in the movie. I don't remember if it actually happens in the books. Please don't hurt me, Tolkien fans. I don't remember the books that well. But yeah, no, it definitely happens in the movie. And it's always, I always feel like Gandalf is kind of being a jerk because it's like, oh, you can smoke, blow like a ring. Like I can make a boat out of smoke because I'm a wizard. It's like, yeah, no, we know your magic and stuff. Like, you know, it's just... But this is how I feel like the dolphins are flexing on us, where it's like, oh, you can blow a smoke ring. I guess that's cool. I can make a shimmering ring of air underwater that is shiny and beautiful. And they will do all sorts of trick with the ring. So they can manipulate it. They can like push it forward or make it like do a spin. They'll even like blow like a second ring and then like join them together so that it forms one big ring. And when you watch a video of them, which I will include in the show notes, like it's very clear they're just having a good time. There doesn't seem to be any purpose to this. Now, dolphins do use bubbles as tools. Sometimes they'll create bubble nets where they basically swim in a circle around a group of fish and then blow a bunch of like bubbles and or like use their flippers to stir up a bunch of bubbles in the water, and that traps the fish in this column of bubbles, and then they use that to hunt. But with these bubble rings, there's no, seemingly no practical purpose to it. It's just for fun. They're just playing. And they seem to understand the physics of the bubble ring, not just in how they like interact with it and like push it around and play with it, but they also, there's researchers that observed them doing this, and they found that, like, you know, the trick where they do like the first bubble ring and then they do a second one and then join them together. The dolphins would only do that if the first bubble ring was structurally stable. So they, like, the dolphins learn, like, okay, this bubble ring is, like, looks really good and stable, so I can blow a second one to join with the first one. So that means they know how this works. They understand the physics of these bubbles and, like, how to do sick bubble tricks. And it's...
They're almost like the cats of the ocean, like cats who just hunt but also play with their food and just bat a yarn around. Mm-hmm.
They do literally play with their food. Like, you'll see an article come out every so often where it's like, dolphins like to torture seals, and like, you think they're cute and fun, but really they're like murderous torturers. And it's just, well, I mean, have you ever had a house cat? Yeah, like, predators like to play
also
with their food.
Humans should not be speaking. I mean, we literally kill animals and then mold them into shapes of other animals and eat them. Like, dino nuggets? What's up with that?
That is such a crime against chickens. I'm not like, and look, I must admit, I'm not a full vegetarian. I do eat chickens, but I do feel weird about disrespecting them by like forming them into dinosaurs, where it's like, chickens, remember when you were a mighty dinosaur and now you're just a little feathery dinosaur that we eat?
So yeah, evil. Yeah, that's true. There's that other layer. I mean, if you believe in evolution, which I don't. No, I'm just kidding.
Teresa is canceled.
Don't cancel me. Yeah, no, we're definitely the worst. And we love to project, like, oh, can you believe these animals are hunting? It's like, well, we just breed them to eat.
Yeah, we do factory farming, which some might argue is more cruel. Yeah, yeah. I mean, we are like really, like, throw the first stone, which, like,
I do eat meat, by the way. I just like to make observations.
No,
100%. These are also roasting me myself. I'm not casting any stones on anyone.
Or like, oh, dolphins fight each other. It's like, yeah, we have we have nukes.
Literally.
We have nukes. Like, basically any time we're like, oh, these animals are vicious and they fight each other, we have nukes that could... We have enough nukes to basically destroy the planet like 10 times over, so...
If we treated animals the way we defend male perpetrators in Hollywood when stuff gets out, where everyone's like, yeah, but like, okay, there's like, how many people? Just two people? Yeah, but look at all these good things they do.
Right,
but with animals, you're like,
oh my
this
God,
one animal played with their food.
Yeah. That dolphin ripped the seal's head off and is playing with it like a football. It's like, but you know, he's such a nice dolphin, though.
A nice dolphin. Very
and,
nice
like,
dolphin.
He's got a great career in like dolphin lacrosse.
How many kids has that dolphin made laugh, you know?
Right.
Just, like at
like the captain of the dolphin soccer team.
He's got potential. That dolphin... had a career.
Don't cancel dolphins. Don't cancel dolphins is what I'm saying. You know? Look, can't there's a lot of things we should cancel. Dolphins aren't one of them. Because of all the cool bubble tricks they do. I really am kind of a sucker for the dolphin bubble tricks. They like they'll like sometimes balance sort of the bubble ring on their nose and then like whip it around, and it's like, dolphin, I see what you're doing.
They're
like,
just very showboaty. Like, one of them is eating a bubble I saw. They'd like,
like snapping
it
in half.
It.
Like, imagine if this was a fish. Chomp. I could behead a fish anytime I want.
Is there any mating rituals to this, or is this just for fun?
It's hard to say. Like, I wouldn't necessarily rule that out. I don't think there's any concrete research on whether it's a form of communication, because certainly they do sometimes do, like, bubble blowing and, like, showboating as a form of communication. It can be used to, like, impress other dolphins. I don't know that it is strictly a mating routine, but I think it's possible that, like, they could use it to impress the ladies, be like, hey, check this out. I learned this trick. I like to call it the tornado of love.
I mean, wow, I'm hooked. Well, is it only men who do it or both?
No, but I think they all do it. It's just fun. It's a good time.
It's interesting. It's almost like dancing because some people, humans, dance for, you know, to impress their potential mates, but also some people just dance for fun.
So yeah.
I think I'm one of those people because I dance by myself alone and it's just as fun as going to a club.
I dance for exercise now. I have that Switch game called Just Dance 2020, and it's where, like, it tracks your movements somewhat and, like, rates you. It's definitely not doing a great job tracking my movements, because if it really could, it would give me, like, an F on every dance I do. But it's like, oh, you're a superstar. I'm like, no, really, I'm not, like,
no, you are. Dancing is how much you feel it.
That's
don't let
true.
The screen tell you what to do.
I think that, like, if it had, I do want it to, like if I could wear a shirt that's, like, connected to the Switch somehow and it measures how much I sweat, I feel like that would be the true measure of, like, how good I'm dancing, because, yeah, I get very sweaty when I get into it. But it is fun.
Sometimes I will change into more comfortable dancing clothes to cook, because I really like to cook and dance at the same time, because I'll play music and I'll just dance around and then, like, move into my living room while, like, you know, the waiting for the water to boil and just do a little twerk number. And yeah, it's fun.
So I think that we've basically covered every hobby you could possibly need in quarantine, whether it is baking bread out of your own saliva and pollen, or creating a fake starry sky with a bioluminescent butt. You know, I think we got everything covered. Do you have any new hobbies you think you're going to try out to, like inspired by these animals?
Yeah, the bioluminescent butt. I'm going to go for that, yeah.
Seconded. Agreed. Well, thank you so much for joining me today, Teresa. I know you have a fun quarantine kind of entertainment thing coming up. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Sure. I'm doing a live show on Zoom, so socially distant, on Friday. I guess this Friday, September 25th, 7 p.m. So you can get tickets online, and it'll be fun. It's I'm doing stand-up with Babs Gray and Dominique Jellin. Follow me at Larissa T to get tickets. And also, if you want to buy a hat, I'm selling hats that say, "Cancel me, Daddy."
Nice.
Which started as a Twitter joke. People actually wanted them, and turns out they do. But I still have a few left. But yeah, so follow me online. You can get them there.
That's fantastic. We need to get these hats for dolphins. So that, like, when the dolphins get canceled, they can be like, yeah, well, check out my hat. I wanted it to happen. Well, that is awesome. Check that out. You can find us at Creature Feature Pod on Instagram, at Creature Feet Pod on Twitter. That's F-E-A-T, not F-E-E-T. That is something very different. You can find me at Katie Golden, K-A-T-I-E-G-O-L-D-I-N on Twitter. And, you know, just Katie Thoughts and so on. And as always, I am also at Pro Bird Rights, where I make the case that the upcoming bird revolution, where birds become the dominant species, is not only inevitable, but good and welcome. Thank you so much for listening. If you're enjoying the show and you leave a rating and review, I will be eternally grateful to you. It really does help out. It tells the robots that we're a good show. And I also read all the reviews, and they warm my cold, cold, spider-loving heart. So thank you for that. Thanks to the Space Cossacks for their super awesome song, Exolumina. Creature Features, a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts like the one you just heard, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or, hey, guess what? Wherever you listen to your favorite shows, even if it's on the butt of a glowworm. See you next Wednesday.